Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 14. The NFL season is underway, and the Steelers are getting it going Sunday in Baltimore at, what is it, MT Bank Stadium they play down in there, Dave?
Yeah.
MT Bank Stadium against the Baltimore Ravens. What a way to kick off Week 1. We had a good one last night, and we got a big one coming Sunday, Dave.
Yeah. What'd you think about that game? Let's kind of start off with that real quick here, even though it's not kind of Steelers related, but it kind of is if you look at how, you know, those offenses are. What were your thoughts on that game last night?
Much the way I expected. I'll put myself on the ledger as 1-0, although
rub it in. I almost walked through the back door there and picked up my money.
There you go. As we know, it came down to the last play of the game, and you know the talking heads are all chirping about play calling and stuff like that, and people who say it wasn't a great game are saying, wow, you know, nobody played defense and this and that. But no, you had two great quarterbacks. You know, the NFL game has become a game where the passing game is predominant. You got offensive coordinators who are willing to open it up and really, you know, look, this is, people who know us know well enough that we're big Steeler fans and you know, we'll tell it like we think it is. But there's no question the two guys who were on the field last night, quarterback in those two teams, are two of the best in the game. They're fun to watch. I had a great time watching the game. And, you know, just happy to have the season underway. I think Green Bay, as we talked about yesterday, I think Green Bay could be a team that wins 13, 14 games. I would not be at all surprised to see them win the NFC.
Yeah, you know, getting back to the play call in there, I think those were two key calls. In fact, Peyton kicked himself, you know, basically took ownership of that 4th-and-1 call. I thought that was a huge play in the game, you know, to try to do what he did with Breeze there. Why, you know, if you can't get, you know, that's the perfect time to find out what your rookie running back's made of right there, not at the end of the game with the game on the line, you know, at the end. I would have went a little bit opposite than what he did there. I thought that was a key turning point of the game, and it might have cost the Saints to win there. Now, these are two wide open offenses, you know, and this is what it's going to take to win in the NFL, you know, nowadays, David. And we saw this in the Super Bowl last year, and we see how the Steelers are kind of lining up the offense going forward now. Boy, the missed tackles in that game were sloppy, but the quarterback play, as you stated, that's hard to defense. I know people were throwing out some comments, or it looks like William Gay's playing for him, you know, for the Saints and all like that. But when you have a quarterback, you know, putting the ball through the eye of the needle like Aaron Rodgers did last night, you know, you can't stop that. I'm sorry. You know, you can only pressure so much, and if you're not getting to the quarterback, he's going to kill you.
Yep, and it's exactly what we've seen. The Steelers, the style of defense that they play, it's been talked about. The corners are going to play a little bit soft. We've seen it's the pressure that you get. You completely shut down the run game. The pressure that you get from the front seven is going to be enough that, you know, unless you're an elite quarterback, if you have to take that extra read or if you can't throw it through the eye of the needle, as you said, then the Steelers are going to shut you down. But if you are that good as these two guys are, I'm not sure any defense is going to completely shut you down. And so that's what the Steelers are going to face again this year. We'll see if the corner play is better, and we'll get into this about this Ravens game because Joe Flacco is one of those guys who's not quite at that level. And you and I have talked about it. You know, I think we generally agree, take Peyton Manning out of the equation now with the news that he had surgery yesterday and he's going to miss 2 to 3 months. There are five probably elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and the Steelers are fortunate to have one on their side. So that leaves four, and that's not a lot of elite guys. And the question is, are guys like Matt Schaub that the Steelers are going to face in Week 4, or Joe Flacco, or, you know, other guys the Steelers are going to see, are they ready to take that next step and be able to do that stuff? And the general answer is no, and that's what makes the NFL so interesting. But I think when people I don't know that people just appreciate – maybe they do. I don't want to undersell that. People really realize how good these two quarterbacks are compared to the rest of the guys in the league. And the other thing that comes away from that game that, you know, everybody knows is, look, special teams still make a huge difference.
Amen. Boy, Darren Sproles, what a great addition that is for the Saints. Not only do they kind of save a little bit of money there, but this guy has proven to be more durable than a Reggie Bush. And then on the other side of the ball, boy, that Cobb kid, what a hell of a 108-yard return that kid had there. And, I think McCarthy was angry at first that he was bringing it.
Oh, he said if you were on the other side of the headset, you would have heard a lot of things you didn't want to hear.
Yeah, and then I think there was on the other touchdown of his too. I think he ran the wrong route or something. I think I read or heard on top of it. So that's just a rookie making mistakes, but he's such a playmaker on top of it that they both resulted in touchdowns.
Yeah, I know we talked about him during the draft, coming into the draft, whether he was a guy that would fit the bill of the Antoine Randall-El type role for the Steelers, and liked him a lot, He's a talented kid. I don't know how big a career he's going to have, but he certainly jump started it on week one. That's about as good as it gets for a rookie first game of the season on national television.
Yeah, I bet people were scrambling to their fantasy rosters to pick him up, but I bet that is as high as output he gets all year.
Right, right. Well, good stuff there. Let's get right into what's going on Sunday. The injury report, not a lot new. I guess the piece of news that I saw that was most interesting is Jericho Cotchery got it. The Steelers sent him for an MRI yesterday. Results yet to be released. That's not good news. That means he's probably down not only this week, but maybe he's down for a couple weeks if it's not progressing the way they would like. And then what's the word on Marcus Gilbert, who was listed as having a concussion on the Wednesday injury report? How did he go yesterday?
Yeah, he practiced fully, and they had an interview, I think it was with Bruce Arians, and he said this is his third tackle in. So, as long as he practices fully today, doesn't have any type setbacks, I think he's going to be up on Sunday against the Ravens. Hey, the kid had a great preseason, I thought. He's played both tackle positions during the preseason. We've talked about him in previous podcasts, how we thought he might have got off to a slow start with the hamstring injury in camp. But, hey, he's living up to a number two billing, and I would expect him to dress and serve as that, the next tackle in the game. Hopefully we don't need that, but I expect him to be up, barring any setbacks.
So we've shuffled around our inactives a few times here during the course of the week, and I guess you and I have talked about it a little bit before we got on air. And the question is, I guess the first question is, do the Steelers dress three quarterbacks, Dennis Dixon being the third quarterback? And let's just go with the presumption that they dress two. Dixon doesn't dress. That means we kind of came down to two of the three of Ramon Foster, Curtis Brown, and Steve McClendon would dress. You had the other five inactives. You want to just list those guys?
Yeah, I think they're only going to dress seven linemen, so that would mean Chris Scott and Ramon Foster would be down. If Dixon is down, which it's looking like he will, Hines Ward taking snaps late in practices at quarterback in case of emergency situation. Jericho Cotchery, he has to be down with his hamstring. In fact, I would expect him to be listed as doubtful or out today. The same with Chris Carter and Hibbs' hamstring. He'll be down. Jonathan Dwyer, there's no reason to have four running backs up, so Dwyer will be down. So the question becomes, do you want a special teamer up? I think Cortez Allen has a good shot to be down too.
Yep.
If you do that, that's pretty much
that's seven, right?
That's so, your seven.
So for me, the question is, in the first week of the season with Ligurski starting at right guard, Trey Essex being a swing guy, you've told me that Ligurski would be the center in case if something did happen to Pouncey. So Essex would move to right guard. And my question would be, in this scenario, which they haven't really run that often, do you dress eight linemen in the first game and do you sit either McClendon or Curtis Brown? I wouldn't be shocked if they did that in week one, just my feeling. But, if they go with past practice, as you've said, they'll sit the two linemen.
Yeah, they normally, and all of them appear to be healthy. I guess the only real question was Jonathan Scott, but he played last week. And if Gilbert is a 100%, I really don't see the, it's not like a lineman, an extra lineman is going to help you on special teams either. Not that McClendon does that much either. I think he can play on some field goal teams and field goal block teams. Outside of that, that's all you're going to get. But I think Curtis Brown's going to be up for special teams. Plus, this is a top round pick. You want to get him on the field flying around special teams wise, get him acclimated to the speed of the game as well. So I would only dress seven, and I would go ahead and dress McClendon and Curtis Brown.
Okay, if I'm making the roster, I sit McClendon and I dress Foster. I've got eight linemen dressed. We'll see what happens on Sunday morning. Dave, let's get into this game. These two teams know each other. I saw some stat the other day since whatever it was, 2003, the Steelers and the Ravens have played 18 times. The Steelers are 10-8. They've only outscored them by 7 points. Well, that's nice and interesting. The Steelers have pretty much owned the Ravens when it mattered. They've won the big games. They've won the games when Ben played. The Ravens have lost the games with Flacco when Ben played. So going into this game, the lines makers have the Ravens a small favorite. I'm just going to come out up front here. We're not going to save this tease for the end. I don't see this game. It's certainly a game, as every game in the NFL is. It's a game the Steelers can lose. But I just look at these two teams, and the Steelers' offense is as potent as we've seen it in years. The defense should remain relatively unchanged from years past. The Ravens, lack of continuity in the offensive line, the youth at corner. They're going to be a good football team. I don't think they're going to be a great football team this year. I don't see them winning 10 games. I see the Steelers taking care of business here in week one. What are your general overview thoughts on what's going to happen?
Boy, so much for foreplay, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Here, bam. There you go.
Yeah. Tune in next week for the wrap up podcast there. Holy crap. You know what? I've got to, I want to argue with you so bad. And I think, I mentioned to you before we got going here, boy, you know, we might need a good cop, bad cop, thing here pretty soon, but I just can't.
So you're going to have to be the bad cop then.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm all Steelers stuff.
Listen, I think the Steelers offense is built to score points this year. I think the Ravens are also taking a step back. I still think they're good enough to earn a wild card spot this year. And hell, even the division's not out of the question, depending on what the Steelers do, you know, outside of this first game here. But I'm with you on this. I'm going to be interested to see if the Ravens can put up more than the 17 points. Okay, and I think the Steelers are built this year not to be in these close games like that. I think they're going to be a more aggressive this year. Why wouldn't you when you have this receiving crew? And I think this has the makings to be a 2-touchdown game as well. So hopefully all of our listeners don't hit the off button right now, because we're going to break this down even more. But I'm with you, David. I don't think this game should be close.
One of the things I found interesting, and you know, people are very stat focused in today's game, largely because of fantasy, but it's always fun to see your team up there in the rankings, and the Steelers tout the fact that they had the number one defense last year. Bruce Arians was asked if the Steelers offense, how he felt about them going into the season, could they be a number one ranked offense? And I thought his quote was interesting and on point when he said, look, you know, some teams look to run up the score. Other teams look to grind out and make sure you win the game. And our offense is designed to run clock when we're up in games. And that's the thing that we talk about, the skill, the talent at the skilled positions that the Steelers have this year, that we've not seen kind of the plethora of talent that they have this year and years past. But they still have a team that can run the football. They've got Heath Miller, who's just the unsung guy, the guy who's not been spoken about at all during the preseason. I'll be interested. And I'll just throw this to you. When they come out in this game tomorrow on Sunday, you expect to see the standard two wide receiver, two tight end set to open the game, and do you expect them to pound the ball to start the game?
The Steelers, I expect them to come. You know what I would do? You know, I want to test those corners. I want to see what Kerry Williams and Jimmy Smith have, okay? And you're also going to have Zibikowski likely starting at the strong safety position there. You know, if I first play from scrimmage, boy, I try to test them and see, you know, what they have back there. What I want is Zibikowski. If Zibikowski's in the game, you're going to see them switch these safeties out, him and Bernard Pollard. So You know, I want them to force a different safety into the game. And if Zbikowski stays in the game, then you kind of run at him. You want to try to bring him up into the box. You want to try to make him make tackles if the line is good. On the flip side, if Bernard Pollard comes in the game to help stop that run, well, then I want to make him see what he has, a strong safety throwing away from the Ed Reed side. But I think you use Redmond as a weapon. I think if everybody's dropped back there, in a cover two, and the corners are kind of playing off, which I expect them to play a little bit, more press Sunday. You could always dump the ball off to the backfield. I think Mendenhall gives you the build.
I was like, wow, holy cow, are we starting Redmond all of a sudden?
Well, I think he is going to get some carries. I think he'll be one to spell Mendenhall first in this game, but. With Mendenhall, you have so many ways to run the offense through him.
Yep.
I think you will see, a lot of 11 personnel, a lot of 12 personnel throughout the game. The good thing with the 12 personnel and the two tight ends now.
Dave, explain to our listeners who might just be new this year to what those terms mean.
Anytime you use a number personnel like that, like 11 or 12 or 13, the first number is always the running back, number of running backs in the game. So, and the second number is the tight end, number of tight ends in the game. And then you can do the math from there of how many wide receivers would be in the game. So if you're running 11 or 12 personnel, 11 personnel would be one running back and one tight end in the game, and a 12 personnel would be a one running back and two tight end package in there, along with the receivers after that.
Right.
Yep. So I think that you could see some instances here where you have you're not going to have your tight end off the field much. I think they ran what's called a one personnel, which is basically one tight end and four wide receivers a few times, and of course some zero packages where there were zero running backs and zero tight ends in the game. You're not going to see that much. I think you're always going to have a tight end on the field. But with Wesley Saunders now also and David Johnson, you can run some 12 personnels and 13 personnels and do so much out of that, even with Rashard Mendenhall in the game, and even using if you go with the one wide receiver and a 13 personnel with Mike Wallace outside. So this is something that your tight ends, I think, are going to give you this year that you didn't get out of them last year with Matt Spaeth, because let's face it, Matt Spaeth was not a threat in.
You're not going to stretch the field,
right? And I think you're going to see Saunders get probably 10 or 12 snaps. David Johnson's going to get quite a few snaps as a second tight end there, but ideally there's so much that you can do, out of these different personnel packages. And to get back to your original question, I don't know if I run. I would be surprised if Mendenhall touches the ball more than 20 times. Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that we've talked about and we'd like to see is we'd like to see him get the ball more in the passing game, wheel routes, things like that. If you can isolate him on linebackers, it's one of the things the Ravens do well. They burned the Steelers on that a couple of years ago. Ray Rice, getting Ray Rice the ball out of the backfield. The Steelers have linebackers who can run, and certainly Lawrence Timmons epitomizes a guy who can do so many different things. And we killed the Steelers for having Ferrier on Rice last year or 2 years ago. I don't know. We were talking about it last year. Just that's not the matchup you want. You want Timmons running with Ray Rice. And it's the Steelers will look to do the same thing. And I think more of this year is if they can get Mendenhall out of the backfield on linebackers who, just turning the hips and running with Mendenhall, they're not going to be able to do it. And it just gives you so many weapons in this passing game. And again, I just want to talk about the fact that Heath Miller, I think he caught 47 balls last year, some number in the 40s. And he's a guy who, no question, he can catch, five balls a game. Five balls a game in an NFL season is 80 balls. We'll see how many targets he gets, but there's so many guys to go to that I don't know that he'll even get targeted that many times.
Yeah, we've mentioned in the past there's not enough balls to go around, and hopefully, you know, selfishness does not take over at some point during the season there. Arians has been trying to sell that all offseason to the offensive, you know, to the skill position players there. But, you know, also when you have, you know, we talked about this recently too, you know, able to get Heath Miller off the field a little bit more this year to save the wear and tear on him. But on the flip side, when you have two tight ends, three tight ends that can all block the way it seems that Saunders came on during the preseason as well at that part of the game, you know, Jonathan Scott might need some help on that one side with Suggs in this game.
No question he's going to have his hands full.
You know, he's going to have his hands full. I think he can handle them for the most part, but there's going to be situations where you're going to have to keep a tight end in. The question is can you confuse them as to which tight end is staying in on a certain play and send the other one out to the, you know, out in a route? Now, I don't worry so much with Willie Colon on the other side. I think Suggs is their key pass rusher. You know, I think they live and die by him. I don't think it's like the Steelers where you have two excellent pass rushers in Harrison and Woodley, and then you have the the opportunity to blitz a streaking Timmons up the center, you know, up the middle on a fire zone, you know, blitz or on, when the middle guys come. So, you know, I just think they outclass them in all areas of the game here. And even if you do have to help Jonathan Scott all day, you know, with a running back chip, it's something Mendenhall's good at. Mawaldi Moore's great at chipping when he's in the game. Isaac Redman has showed us all of last year that this guy is a complete back. There's no drop-off, in my opinion, even if Mendenhall has to come out of the game. So there's so many weapons on the offensive side of the ball, and the Ravens' defense has so many questions outside of their front four, I guess, because, you know, Ray Lewis is another year older. Some of their linebackers are just not as established, not taking anything away from them. I think they've got a great linebacker group, but, you know, it plays out fantastic on the offensive side of the ball for the Steelers.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see the Steelers, how effective they are running the ball. They're not going to abandon the run here. I think we probably, we're sitting here talking about the passing game the whole time, but with Cody, the kid, the second-round pick last year out of Alabama, now taking over at nose tackle and not playing basically a right defensive tackle, and them having Suggs playing essentially a right stand-up defensive end in a 3-4 alignment. It'll be interesting to see how the Steelers look to run the ball. We know that the Steelers like to run to their right side. That'll be coming into those three down linemen. So, you know, that's one thing. Look, the Steelers have always said we want to establish the run. I don't expect that to be different. We'll see play action, but they'll want to run play action because they've been able to establish the run. So I think we'll see that stuff early on, and that's going to be a real test for Ligursky, for Willie Colon, back playing his first NFL game in 2 years. You know, if you're focusing, and we're starting here obviously with the Steelers on offense and what they're going to do. If you're going to focus, clearly the focus is how the offensive line does. As you said, can Jonathan Scott handle Suggs on the left side? And then the Steelers are able to pound the ball, and we'll look to see them pound the ball on the right side of the line and how Ligursky and Willie Colon stand up to these defensive linemen.
You know, another thing here, you know, when they've made Ligursky the starter, that tells me too, because the weak area of Tony Hill's game was pulling to the left side. Okay, he could get there. He could never clear the hole. Ligursky can. Okay, and that's something they weren't able to do. They were not able to run trap to that left side last year. They were predominantly a right-handed team, but there was no mystery there because they just did not run well to the left side overall. So, you know, what you'll be able to do, you'll see a lot of pulling to the right and to the left. At least I would. I would give Ligursky every opportunity to get out in space, pulling to the left, and kind of attacks, you know, Suggs heading that way to keep him honest against the run. If he knows he can just pin his ears back every time and come after the quarterback, he's even more dangerous. Now, on the flip side, by opening up and passing the football early in this game, And if you're able to connect and have success with it, what you're going to have the opportunity to do is you're going to have the opportunity to get Cody off the field more, because they're going to go with the extra, you know, more of a nickel look and extra defensive back package if they're starting to get burnt even on early downs. Okay, so if you get Cody off of that field, that's a prime, piece that Marquise Pouncey and Ligurski and Kimo Atu will not have to handle in there. Then they're totally reliant on the play of their linebackers to stop the running game. So that's another reason why I pass early in this game, is I want to get Cody off the field. I want them to go with some 2-4-5 personnel groupings on a defensive end of the ball, and I want them chasing us instead of them chasing us. I mean, us chasing them instead of them chasing us.
Yep, good stuff. On the defensive side for the Steelers, we're going to see Aaron Smith back. First time we've seen him since game 6, game 7 of last year, when he went down with that biceps shoulder arm injury that he had, and stayed on the 53-man roster the whole season. He'll be in there. There are no mysteries as to what the Steelers are going to do. We're going to watch and see how the corners play, particularly McFadden at the right corner. That's, if you're going to look at the 11 guys who are starting on defense, he's clearly the guy who, if you want to attack, you'd look at and say he's the weak link. Ike's going to come back. He's going to have a protective padding on his thumb, but he doesn't seem, in order to the Steelers seem to think it's going to affect his play. Every joke has been made about he can't catch the ball anyway. If he starts catching it now, let's break the other thumb. So we'll pass on the requisite thumb jokes for Ike. But his physical fitness shouldn't be an issue. He was able to maintain that with this thumb injury. Let me ask you the two things I think are interesting early on. Ziggy, I think we expect Ziggy to be essentially play probably as many plays as Kiesel and as Aaron Smith play. But does Cam Hayward get snaps here?
I think he will. I think by the time, especially on long drives, because you're going to have to rotate out some fresh bodies here. If they're able to get off the field, early in this game and kind of save these guys, not so much. But on any drive with a couple of first downs, I think you'll see Cam get some time on defense. I would expect maybe, just throwing out there, maybe 12 or 13 snaps. Hopefully, it's that low, A, because everybody stays healthy during the game, and B, they just don't need to rotate out the bodies there. But one key point about on the defensive side of the ball here, and when we talked to John Eisenberg yesterday, which, by the way, if you missed that podcast yesterday, is a great interview with him.
Nice job by John. Giving us the skinny on what's going on in Baltimore.
Yeah, this offensive line has not cohesively taken a snap during the preseason, okay? There are a lot of questions about this line and their ability to pick up some of these stunts and blitzes that LeBeau is going. By the way, happy birthday to Dick LeBeau today. Got to make sure we get
74
that
years. 74 years young.
Yeah, amen. Release the doves and all that stuff, man, because it's a joyous day. At least it should be a holiday, in my opinion. But back on point here, you got to go after this line. I think that the two key guys in this game is going to be James Harrison and Lamar Woodley attacking McKinney and Michael Orr on the right. Michael Orr switched over to right tackle here. Woodley could have a huge game, and he could actually take over this game, on the outside, especially on pass rush situations and all like that. So, and it'll be a good test to, let's face it, McKinney was released from the Falcons, Vikings, who have a horrible offensive line this year. So if he's cut, because of his weight and all like that, and some say he's lazy on and off the field, a healthy James Harrison should be able to own him. And this will also force them to keep, those tight ends, Pita and Dixon, in more to help Chip. And it could mean that Vonta Leach is kept out of the game on top of it if they need that kind of help. So I think the Steelers defense can really, own this game from the linebacking position. Let's face it, our defensive ends in this scheme, they hold the point. They're not big pass rushers. People get tired of hearing that and wonder why these guys don't get more sacks. It's because it's not their job. It's to push the guys back to get a little bit of pressure But the guys that clean up and get the sack totals and all are going to be your linebackers once again. And boy, I look for a huge game from Woodley here, and hopefully James Harrison shows us that back's okay and can dominate McKinney on the left side, or at least make them give him help over there.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've covered the big issues that we'll expect to see in the nickel package. We'll expect to see William Gay if the Steelers go dime. Keenan Lewis will be on the field, I would imagine. I don't know that Ryan Mundy will get a lot of burn. I thought he looked reasonably good in the preseason, but just the way the nature of the defenses are going to be set up, I'm not sure he'll see the field much. The other thing to watch for the Ravens, when the Ravens have the ball and what they're trying to do, look, this thing's going to run through Ray Rice. He is an explosive back. He's a dominant back. The kid out of Rutgers has established himself as an NFL star. Their issue is going to be Lee Evans, the new guy, take the top off the coverage. He can go deep. It'd be interesting to see if Ike follows him around at all, or if they just stay on one side of the field and the other and don't follow him around, because obviously Anquan Boldin is a big, strong guy, tough to bring down. He's a guy, in the open field, he's Terrell Owens-esque, a big, strong guy who can run past you and tough to bring down, but he's not going to take the top off. They've got four receivers as their three through six on the depth chart who haven't caught an NFL pass, and they've got some high hopes, but it'll be interesting to see if they go with the two tight end, two receiver package, or whether they go fullback, as you talked about, Vonta Leach, who's a guy who's never going to touch the ball. He's going to touch a lot of Steelers. And then how they format or formation around that. If they've got a fullback in there, expect to see the kid, what's his name, Dixon, the tight end.
PETA and Ed Dixon.
Yeah, Ed Dixon. Expect to see Dixon on the field most of the time, those two receivers, and then the fullback. But it'll be interesting to see if they go to three and four wide receiver sets at all, or if they're content to run this offense. And as you said, not having the cohesion in the offensive line, you may see less variety of offensive sets from the Ravens than you might later in the season.
Yeah, with this new offensive line, let's face it, they would rather run block than they would pass block.
Yep.
Even though it goes against all, what people would suggest they should probably do in attacking the Steelers defense, they ought to try to spread them out. But as you mentioned, the youth in the receiving core, I just don't think they're going to be able to do it effectively. So I think they're going to try to run first and run often. They want the Steelers defense on the field for a long time. They want the Steelers offense off the field. So, how we handle them running power running, early in this game will really set the tone. If you let Baltimore come out and run a 12 or 13 play drive with eight or nine runs mixed in there, or a few dump offs to Ray Rice out of the backfield there, it's going to be a long day, because especially if the Steelers offense can't counter offensively. Hopefully, if you can shut that Ravens run game down, force them into some down and distances, predictable passing the game, in the passing game. I think that's where you got him. And you hit a good point on Ike Taylor. We don't know how he's going to line up. To me, I want Ike Taylor tackling as less as possible right now with that thumb, even though it's going to be in a brace or a cast or whatever. I would rather him follow around Lee Evans, which he's had good success with over his career and when he was at Buffalo. I want Ike just bumping, running this guy and just making sure there's no explosive plays in this game. And then the other worry will be who has the slot, when Boldin lines up in the slot. I think we've seen in the past Gay try to do it, and then some Ryan Clark will sneak up in there and all. But Anquan Boldin could be the biggest key in this game. If he goes off for nine catches for 100 yards and a touchdown, well, then, the Ravens have done what they want to do. So I say take away Lee Evans, make Flacco be patient, go up underneath, make him have a big game to Anquan Boldin, and make him use Ray Rice out of the backfield.
Good stuff, Dave. Before we give our Steeler predictions, let's take a look around the NFL at the games going on this week and just roll through kind of, we'll just roll through these. I'll just give you the opening line and where the current line stands. And if you've got any thoughts, some of these games are probably not worth a lot of thoughts, but let's take a look around. The Giants are at Washington. That game opened at 3. It's currently at 3. The Redskins had a good preseason. The Giants are favored. Anything from that game?
Boy, the Giants have been hurting with injuries, though, man. And I think they still got a question at a corner position, and I think they had a linebacker or something go down. And Washington open up at home and division game. I got to be honest with you. I'm all over getting these 3 points in this game. So this is probably not going to be a game that gets my money, though, but I would go Redskins plus 3.
I concur. Jets are home against the Cowboys. That's always a big time game. It's Dallas in New York, even though they're playing the Jets, not a division foe. But this would be a big marquee national game. Game opened at 4 for the Jets. It's now 5. We all know what's going on with the Jets. Plex took a nice couple shots at Tom Coughlin today in a magazine article that was obviously held for the first week of the season. I haven't followed closely what's been going on with the Cowboys, but. The Jets are a good team. They're tough defensively. I don't know how many points they're going to score this season, but 5 seems like a good number. I won't touch it, but I'd lean Jets.
Actually, I like this game, and I like the Jets laying the 5. I think Cowboys have some corner issues. The Jets do not have any corner issues. It's going to be hard. Dallas is going to have problems scoring in this game. Not that the Jets are going to really put up 30, I don't think, in this game. But I think the Jets defense is good enough to cover this. So Jets minus the 5.
A game I'm interested in watching. I'll definitely catch some highlights of this everything's going to be up against the Steeler game, so I'm not going to see any of it live. But the Bucks at home against the Lions, these are two interesting teams. Everybody talks about the resurgent year the Bucks had last year under Raheem Morris, a good young team, a good young quarterback, a solid defensive line. These two teams are a little bit mirror images of each other. Matthew Stafford, I think, is going to be one of the best in the game. And Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, the kid out of Auburn, anchoring their defensive line. The Bucs are at home, laying. It went from 3 to 2 where I'm seeing it. Probably a game I'm not going to play, but a game I'm interested to watch.
I'm not playing it either, and I've got it Buccaneers minus 1 right now I can get. I don't know. It depends on if my degenerate side really takes over between now and Sunday morning, but I would lay that one by the Buccaneers at home.
Yeah. The Falcons opened, it's where I've seen it, they actually opened pick in Chicago. And clearly the Falcons are one of the darlings of, the betting masses. Let's put it that way. I don't know how much the sharps love them, but the betting masses love them. They pushed that line all the way up to 3 against the Bears. You know, if you're not a Jay Cutler fan, it's hard to get on the Bears here, but it's also hard to follow the mass money. But, the Falcons, we saw them in the preseason. Do you think the Falcons are as good as everybody says they are?
I damn sure do, man. I really think this team is for real. And this 3 points, I'm all over it, man. Give me the Falcons minus 3. I don't think the Bears have what it takes to hang with them.
All right. Well, I'll get on the other side of you on that one. But, again, I'll probably no cash involved. The Chiefs-Bills, one of the more uninteresting games on the slate this week. The Chiefs are around 6. I think the Bills are probably slightly undervalued in the big picture of the NFL. They haven't been good for a while, so people just assume they're not good. They're so under the radar that I'm not even sure if Ryan Fitzpatrick is their starting quarterback this year. So is he their starting quarterback?
Oh, yeah. And, you got that other Stevie Johnson over there. Have you been logging into my betting account or something like that? Stay out of there, man, or pick winners or something. I got to take the Bills in this right now. I'm seeing it kind of off the board right now. I think it's because of Castle's ribs or whatnot on the Chiefs side. But, hey, the Bills are going to sneak up and bite some people in the ass this year. Why not start it on the road week 1 against the Chiefs? So, give me the Bills plus the points.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The Texans, this line has blown up from 2 to 8.5, 9, depending on where you're looking around. The Peyton Manning news is, it's bad news. I don't care whether you like the guy or not. Nobody's rooting for the Colts. But he's a marquee player, and you never like to see the best players in the league not playing football. And on the same side, everybody has now got, 5 fantasy teams. So I'm sure on one of your teams, you got Arian Foster, or you're playing against a guy who's got Arian Foster. And, he looks like he's not going to go. I'm hearing the latest I've heard is he didn't practice the last 2 days. But the real – and this team is a team to watch because the Steelers get him in the fourth week of the season and they get the Colts in the third week of the season with Kerry Collins. So this game has a lot of interest. It'll have big impact on their division. It went from being a really interesting game to probably a less interesting game. The Texans are at 9. You know, at the end of the day, you put a gun to my head, I'm laying the 9. I don't think the Colts are that good. I'm not sure how good they are with Peyton Manning, and I don't think they're good at all without Peyton Manning.
Boy, when's the last time that you made a bet that you took a team against the Colts and laid, you know, 9 points against them, you know?
How about the fact that they have not started a quarterback other than Peyton Manning since sometime in 1997?
And wasn't that last one Harbaugh?
It was Harbaugh. Exactly. It's exactly right. Who, and just to date everything, is he's the guy who threw the football, the Hail Mary pass that the Colts almost caught in the AFC Championship game in Three River Stadium in 1995, that the Steelers went to the Super Bowl against the Cowboys. So that's the continuity that they've had. We talk about Steeler head coaches. Well, there's a little something for you on the Colts side of things.
Boy, you're getting old, David. I guess I am too. I'm with you, Dave. You know what? The Colts, not only, you know, are they, if Kerry Collins plays like Kerry Collins, which, I mean, I don't mean to be that down on that guy, but listen, he hasn't had a lot of time in this offense. The Colts defense is outside of the pass rush is not very good, in my opinion. Their offensive line outside of Jeff Saturday at center is not very good. The Texans are going to go, you know, making this move under Wade Phillips to the 3-4 here. They're going to turn Mario Williams absolutely loose this year. Kerry Collins is going to be under pressure all day. I see a pick six in this game. I see, even without Foster, they got Derek Ward, they got Ben Tate able to tote the rock for the Texans and all. I'm with you. I'm laying all those points.
Let's roll through these last few. The Eagles-Rams game should be an interesting game to see how much the Rams have improved, and the Eagles are adding all these new marquee guys. They're favored by 4.5 in St. Louis. You know, I'm not a huge buyer of the Eagles, but I'm not enough of a buyer of the Rams to bet them.
Eagles win this game, but I can get 5, and I want those 5 points for the Rams. Rams will make it close, be a field goal game. So Rams are up and coming. They're going to win their share of games. They're going to win that West out there this year, in my opinion. Eagles win, take the Rams and the points.
Browns and Bengals, you know, it's a game the Steelers are going to pay attention to. This game has moved a lot, as much as virtually any game on the board, went from 3 to 6.5 or so. Cleveland's at home. Cincinnati's got huge quarterback issues. They're not a good team. I don't think the Browns are a bad team. I don't know that they win 8 games, but I think they win more than 6 games. I think somewhere around, you know, 6, 7, 8 wins this season for them. Colt McCoy, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Colt McCoy, and they've got some new guys in place. You know, I think they win this game by a touchdown.
If it's only 7, I'm staying away from it. But if I can lay 6.5, I'm all over it. Secondary's better for the Browns than the Bengals, in my opinion. The young quarterback in play, first NFL start. I'll stay away from it unless I can lay less than 7.
Yep. Jags, Titans, who cares?
Basically. That's going to be an ugly game. They'll probably end up being high scoring for some reason. Play the over.
Cards, Panthers. I mean, essentially, that's a who cares. We're interested to see how Kevin Cobb and Cam Newton do in their debuts with their respective teams. That line's moved a ton. It's gone to 7. I generally, you know, have a rule of thumb that you bet against rookie quarterbacks. I would lay under 7. I don't know. I lay 7, but I think that the Cards are a better team than they showed last year.
Yeah, this has push written all over it. If I can get under 7, which I doubt I'll be able to, other than that, I'll stay away. Cardinals are going to win this game probably by a touchdown.
Niners-Seahawks is only interesting because Jim Harbaugh is debuting in San Francisco. This is a team that has underperformed their talent level, in most people's opinion, for at least 3 or 4 years here. Alex Smith again back at quarterback. It's a team I like to root for no reason. I don't have any idea why. I've got a little bit of a soft spot for the 49ers. I could care less about the Seahawks. They've turned their whole roster over in the year and a half, 2 years that Pete Carroll's been involved. It's hard to believe this was a playoff team last year, because when you look at it and say, who's going to win what team's going to have, win 2, 3, or 4 games this year? This is one of those teams. The Niners win this game, but I don't know if they win by 30 or win by 3.
Yeah, I don't have a good feeling on the Niners. I haven't gotten to see a lot of them during the preseason. New coaches and all like that. I kind of like to watch a couple of games first before I go, betting a dog food on them. But, yeah, I stay away from this one altogether. I think the 49ers win, but like you said, is it by 30 or is it by, late field goal?
Let me just change the order here a little bit and go to the late Monday night game, which is the Broncos and the Raiders. I think people are always interested to see if the Raiders are going to be competitive. And even though the Steelers really put it on them last year, the Raiders weren't a bad football team. And if their offensive line is okay, they have a chance to be a decent football team. Obviously, the coaching change with Hugh Jackson in there. The Broncos, the whole organization seems to be in disarray ever since they went to the Josh McDaniels hire, the Tim Tebow first-round pick. I don't know. I mean, Kyle Orton is, to me, a mid-level NFL quarterback. He's better than 10 other guys who are going to be starting games on Sunday. But I don't know that they have enough around him. I'm surprised the game went from pick to 3. And if you put it on me, I'd take the Raiders.
I'm going the other side of the fence because Jason Campbell's on the other side of playing quarterback. I think Orton's a better quarterback. And unless something strange happens, like a couple of special teams touchdowns or something like that. This is a game the Broncos, I think, should win at home. I'm laying the 3.
And the reason I switch the order around is these last two games. I think these are the teams when we sit and Dave and I look at this big picture. What do the Steelers have to worry about this year? Who is their competition? Who are the best teams? I don't think there's any doubt. People looking around the AFC are going to point to San Diego and point to New England. They may pick another team in the whole mix. But these are two really talented teams. Everybody knows that San Diego's issues the past couple of years have been getting off to slow starts. They really put themselves a little behind the eight ball in September and October. Their special teams were god-awful last year. They can only get better. You've got, in the terms of the elite quarterbacks, you've got two of the other 5 here in these two teams. So good stuff. I don't think the games are going to be particularly interesting. The Chargers are at home. A Sunday against the Vikings. The Vikings are a team that's going the other direction. Wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of fall off a cliff here and only win 4 or 5 games. They've got quarterback issues as well, no matter what anybody tells you. But they do have a really good back in Adrian Peterson. It's just unfortunate here that we may see him, if he's with the Vikings the next couple of years, being a little like Chris Johnson with the Titans. A guy who has explosive talents that nobody's going to get a chance to see except on the highlight reels.
Give me the Chargers, lay the 9 points. This one won't be close.
All right. And the Pats against the Dolphins. The Dolphins, everybody's writing them off. I don't think they're particularly good. The Pats had an ungodly plus 28 turnover ratio last year. That probably isn't going to continue at quite that level. They're a better team. But this is a team that, unlike the Steelers, even though they have such great consistency in terms of winning and being a stable franchise, this is a team that is willing, that Bill Belichick is a general manager coach who is willing to turn over his roster at any point in time, all the time. They have a lot of new faces, and it takes a little while to get guys integrated. I don't think they have any trouble winning this game, but I'm not going to touch it because they might win by 30, or, it might be close down there Sunday night or Monday night at 7 o'clock on the first of the two Monday night games.
Bill Belichick loves making statements, especially against divisional teams, especially early in the year, to let them know that they're not good enough to play with them. He's going to try to make one. He will not call off the dogs on this one again. Give me the Patriots. Lay the touchdown.
All right, Dave. Well, that runs through the NFL schedule. Let's get to the game that matters, the Steelers-Ravens. I'll lay it out there first. So, like you said, we didn't leave a lot of foreplay up front in the open. I think the Steelers bring the hammer this game. I'm going to go Pittsburgh 28, Baltimore 13.
I'm going to go field goal better on the Steelers side. I want Steelers 31, Ravens 17. They'll score a couple of touchdowns in this, one of them late maybe, but 31-17.
That's almost what I went with. So we're on the same page here. Listen, we've had a great time doing this. We want to shout out to a couple people who have been good and loyal listeners and appreciate the comments they make on Twitter and email and the phone calls. We've gotten a couple phone calls about things. So Submarine Mike had a question about Ben Roethlisberger. and you know, how he's handled by the referees, and does he not get the calls that other quarterbacks get, and are the Steelers making any comments about that?
Hey, Dave and Dave, it's Submarine Mike 88 from Twitter. My question is after watching the Falcons game and I see Ben take another BS hit when his helmet gets ripped off, when is the press and going to truly say something about how Ben's not protected like the rest of the quarterbacks seem to be? And what can we as fans do? I've already tried tweeting Roger Goodell, but that's probably like banging my head against the wall. Thanks in advance, guys. Love the podcast. Bye.
And Dave, I'll just say that it was apparent in that Falcons game when he got his helmet ripped off, and some other things have happened in the preseason where you ask questions. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody in the NFL is purposely doing anything that's anti-Steelers. I don't think the linesman or the referee or whoever is making that call is saying, wow, that guy's part of the Steelers. That's Ben Roethlisberger. He's not going to get the call here. Has it happened? Yeah. And do the Steelers write letters and make phone calls and tell people those calls aren't being made? Yes, they do. I don't expect to see it. I don't expect a pattern of that going forward. But I do know that there are people who think that, maybe with some justification as things have gone over the last 12 months, that the calls are going against the Steelers with regularity. Do you have any thoughts on that?
We are so blinded by black and gold, and that's a great question. I mean, there was also another hit, I think it was in the Eagles game in the first series, where he got his legs kind of clipped and taken out from him, that Ben was hollering at the officials we like to make fun of it and think that the league's all against us and all like that, especially with the James Harrison. I joke about it all the time. Now James Harrison is more of a target because of the multiple what they call infractions. Ben doesn't get all the calls all the time. I wouldn't go as far as saying there's some bias there. The media has been getting a hold of it, and fans everywhere I know are emailing and bitching about it on Twitter and all like that. And I would not be surprised if we get a couple to go our way this year, you know. So it's so hard to look at, though, when we always see our Steelers games and we see other quarterbacks barely get touched and get the flag, Tom Brady.
Well, and we also got an email from one of our followers in Hungary. We're just bragging now. We have followers in Hungary. We've gotten followers from around the globe. So if you're out there and you catch this and you want to shoot us an email you can shoot us on Twitter at Terrible Podcast, or you can email us theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for the questions. The hotline's open. Dave and I love doing this. We're sorry this one's run a little bit long, and we'll try to always keep these to 30 to 40 minutes, but a lot to talk about in the first week and to get through the picks. Dave, anything before we wrap things up?
No, we appreciate the feedback. We have gotten so much feedback on Twitter and on through the email this past couple of weeks, and it's humbling to see the outreach that this show has, and you hit it on the head. We enjoy doing this. I'm always bugging David, hey, when are we doing the next show? When are we doing the next show? But we thank you as always, and send us any comments or suggestions or questions. We'll try to get to them.
And as we said, now that we're into the regular season, we're going to get three of these up a week, assuming everything goes well. The pattern will be the Monday recap. Wednesday, we'll try to do a look forward at the other team, as we did with John on Wednesday, on Thursday this week, previewing the next week's opponent. Friday, we'll break down the game and give you our picks for the weekend. It's a formula that seems to work, but we'll take some feedback on that if you want to hear something differently. So thanks for all the support. We'll hopefully be back at you Monday talking about a big Steeler victory. You've been listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.